Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Stainis, the host of Voices of Women on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm glad to have you join me today. And today is supposed to be an auspicious day, 11-11-11. And what does that mean to you? I'm seeing lots of emails about it. And regardless if you believe in what they say about the importance of numbers, there's numerology that people study, it can still be a productive time to have an awareness of yourself and the energy around you. And I know many groups are gathering together to meditate today. I know there's something in Seattle at the at a church here, and I'm seeing emails of various gatherings around the country. I just got an email from Vicki Noble asking us to unite in a global prayer in honor of Mother Earth and the natural world. So the energy, they say, that is coming in is to awaken the mind to changes in the evolving consciousness. One article I read states that this light energy is pushing outdated thought and behavioral patterns to the surface. It is surfacing negativity, disharmony, and disease to be released for good. So it's a great time to release the old and then allow the new to come in. It's creating a space for that new to come in. And I'm spending this afternoon with friends, and we're going to meditate and we're going to create vision boards. And vision boards are great to help our unconscious mind bring to the surface what our soul is calling for us to be. And we're just going to focus on what's next for the rest of this year before we even reach 2012. Well, my guest today, Naomi Tutu, is someone who knows her purpose and works at awakening people's minds to the racism that's still in our world. Naomi Tutu is one of our featured guests at the upcoming Woman of Wisdom Conference, and we're very excited to host her in Seattle. She will be speaking on truth and reconciliation, and she'll be giving a workshop for women. I met Naomi at a conference in San Francisco this past spring, and from her, I learned whenever I put someone in the other category, which usually stems from judgments, it's a form of racism, and we do it so quickly. I caught myself in the act 1 hour after hearing her speak, and I went, oh, my God, I just did the other about that person. Naomi's laughing. So Naomi Tutu was led to become an activist for human rights through the challenges of growing black and female in apartheid South Africa. Those experiences taught how much we all lose when any of us is judged purely on physical attributes. In her speeches, she blends the passion for human dignity with humor and personal stories. Ms. Tutu is the third child of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. She was born in South Africa and also lived in, I'll probably pronounce this wrong, Lesotho.
And Lesotho. She's
been, say that again?
Lesotho.
Lesotho. And the United Kingdom and the United States. She was educated in Swaziland, the U.S. and England, and has divided her adult life between South Africa and the U.S. So growing up as the daughter of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, has offered Naomi many opportunities and challenges in her life. Most important of these has been the challenge to find her own place in the world. And she has taken up the challenge and channeled the opportunities that she has been given to raise her voice as a champion for the dignity of all. Her professional experience ranges from being a development consultant in West Africa to being program coordinator for programs on race and gender-based violence in education at the African Gender Institute at the University of Cape Town. In addition, Naomi has taught at the universities of Hartford and Connecticut and Brevard College in North Carolina. So NAMI is a sought-after speaker to groups as varied as business associations, professional conferences, elected officials, and church and civic organizations. She leads truth and reconciliation workshops for groups dealing with different kinds of conflict. And together with Rose Bator, she has written a book, which is provisionally titled, I Don't Think of You as Black, Honest Conversations on Race and Racism. So welcome, Naomi, to Voices of Women.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're very excited to be having you in Seattle, and everybody is. And I'm so looking forward to when you actually get here, which will be, you'll be speaking at Seattle First Baptist Church on February 17th. Well, I'd like to start with about what it was like for you to grow up in South Africa and just share that experience, you know, growing up in apartheid, and what was that like for you?
Well, you know, I always tell people that for all of us, our entry into the knowledge of apartheid came about in different ways. And for me, the biggest introduction was going to boarding school when I was 6 and a half. And it was an introduction because my parents were fortunate enough to be able to send us to boarding school in neighboring countries, in our case in Swaziland, as some of the few black South Africans who were able to remove their children from the Bantu education system and send them into neighboring countries. But that meant that at 6 and a half, I spent most of the year 2 days drive away from my parents, and that just the trip of going to boarding school was a challenge in and of itself, simply for the issue of things like, you know, going to gas stations where they would be quite willing to sell us gas but unwilling to let us use the bathrooms, or not being able to stop along the way and eat at roadside cafes because they would not serve black people. So that experience was the introduction, if you like, to the reality of apartheid for me. And also the fact that on our way, as I said, it was a 2 day drive from where we lived, and we would stop the trip halfway and stop with my grandparents in Krugersdorp. And because of apartheid, my parents were not registered as blacks able to live in Krugersdorp, even though they were both raised in that community. But because of apartheid, they were registered where we lived. And so having to stop at the police station so that my parents could register before we could go and see my grandparents, you know, those kinds of things have an impact on you as a young person trying to make sense of why would it be a matter for the police for us to visit family members. Those experiences were the first eye-opening for me of apartheid and its impact on my own life.
Well, I'm curious, when you talk about that, and as a little kid at 6 and a half, what were your feelings? Were you angry, or did it scare you? What were your feelings?
Well, I mean, it was sadness, from being separated from my parents and my brother and sister. My older sister and I went to the same school, but my older brother was at a different school in Swaziland, and my younger sister was still young enough where she stayed at home. But that it was, you know, the sadness of the separation and trying to make sense of being so far away from home. And, you know, and as I've become a parent myself, I mean, I looked at my daughter and my son at 6 and a half and thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know that I would be able to, I would have had the courage of my parents to be willing to send my children out into the world at that age, you know, without my protection. And so, it was scary. I mean, you know, when you have children ranging in age, as I said, from 6 to 13 or 14 at the school I was at, that that you're setting, you also are setting up a very strange community, if you like, and opening the door for bullying and so, you know, those experiences are still things that I live with and I live through in my own life now.
So you mentioned bullying. Was the boarding school, was it predominantly white people?
No, the boarding school was an interracial boarding school because it was in a neighboring country, but it was predominantly African students and in Swaziland. It was a church boarding school. It was run by nuns from the Anglican Church, which we are Anglican or Episcopalian in this country. Boarding school at that age, I think it's just a very strange experience. Everybody is trying to make sense of being far away from home and juggling for positions there is a strange dynamic set up that does in a way encourage older children to take advantage of younger children, and so the experience was in many ways for me frightening. One of my most vivid memories is of burning my leg while I was at school and trying to get to the clinic to go and see the nurse, but the clinic was open at the time when students in my dorm were supposed to be cleaning the yard. And for 2 days, the older girls wouldn't let me go to the clinic because they said I was just trying to get out of doing my work. And so by the time I got to the clinic, and there was no adult for me to turn to at that point. And so by the time I got to the clinic, the burn had become so infected that I still carry a scar on my leg to this day. So, you know, those kinds of experiences are, traumatic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I imagine they shaped who you are today, too. Well, we're going to get more into that. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk more with Naomi Tutu when we come back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
We all want deeper, more intimate relationships. But how do we create successful relationships and maintain strong connections? Peter Kane has some real answers. Author of The Monogamy Challenge, Creating and Keeping Intimacy, Peter is one of the original breathworkers and relationship trainers with over 30 years' experience. Breathe, relax, or create intimacy and keep it thriving. Visit peterkane.org or contact Peter Kane at 425-802-2050. Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
I was dealing with anxiety and depression, and nothing seemed to help me. Then I started to work with Dr. Schaub's Breakthrough Program. In just a few sessions, he helped me to finally understand and heal the deeper root cause of my challenges. As a result, I feel more centered and confident than ever before. And now I have the tools which will continue to support me throughout my life's journey. Dr. Schaub's approach has changed my life.
Hello, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub, and I work with people across the globe to help them break through anxiety and depression and access their true potential. If you are ready to bring back confidence, joy, and meaning in your life, call us to schedule a free phone consultation at 866 866-903-MIND. That's 866-903-6463. Or visit our website at cellularwisdom.com. That's cellularwisdom.com.
Imagine a chocolate so decadent that you'd never believe it could be good for you. Align your inner bliss with Mother Nature's magic. The power of cold-pressed cocoa by Shosai, the healthy chocolate. Shosai is everything you ever dreamed healthy should taste like. We combine unprocessed cocoa with acai and blueberry for an unbeatable high-oxidant powerhouse. Shosai, the healthy chocolate. Visit us at lifesaverchocolate.com or call 888-287-2011.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm talking with Noemi Tutu today. And Noemi, you were just sharing with us how it was growing up and living, having to go to school in a boarding school and the difficulties of traveling there and all. But there's also another aspect of your growing up is, I'm curious about it, what it was like to have a famous father, you know, that... Everybody knows Desmond Tutu, and he's so, excuse me, well-respected. I saw him here in Seattle with the Dalai Lama, mm-hmm. and I understand he's retired now.
Well, he says he is. I always tell people this is, since this is his third retirement, we're waiting to see whether this one actually takes, so we'll see.
Well, he seems to be managing really well, but you grew up with it under this, you know, his legacy, and what did you get from him?
Well, I have to first of all say that when I was growing up, actually my dad was not that well known when I was growing up, which I think in many ways was a blessing for us, he was known in South Africa, but he wasn't a world figure. When we were little. And so I was able to have a more or less normal upbringing. He won the Nobel Prize when I was already in graduate school, and that's when he became really world famous, though he had by that time been known in church circles. I think that the challenge that for me growing up was the challenge that most ministers' children experience, that there's an expectation put on you by people as to how you are supposed to behave as a priest's child, that, you know, you're supposed to be holier than thou and well behaved and stay in church all the time and join all the youth Christian organizations. And I remember that when we moved back to South Africa from England, and went to another boarding school in Swaziland, that when we got there, people said, you know, there'd been a lot of discussion about you coming and whether you were going to want to take leadership of the Young Christian Fellowship. And I'm thinking, no, that's so far from who I imagine myself to be. Nobody needs to worry that I'm gunning for the seat of president of the Young Christian Fellowship. But that, you know, there's that kind of expectation that you're going to be in those in the same kind of footsteps as your father. And we were fortunate in another way too, in that my mother was very clear about who she was, and she is, you know, very proud of my father and has been supportive of who he has been in the world throughout their marriage. But she's also been very clear that he is the only person in that relationship who went to seminary, and he's the only person in that relationship who is ordained, and that is a choice that he made for himself. He did not make that choice for her or for us, their children, and that since she was so strong in being clear about her own identity, her own personhood, her, you know, her own path in life. She was also very strong and clear for us as their children that, you know, that was what they were standing for us, was to be supportive in the ways that we would see our path clear in our lives. I think from my father, I got particularly, but I think from both of them actually, the passion for human rights, the passion to speak out, and do what I can in, when I see injustice, and also the real sense of being part of a community that, and in a very strange way, I think, that my parents were always clear that we were struggling against apartheid, that we weren't trying to destroy white South Africans, we're trying to get rid of the system of apartheid that oppressed us, and that in fact we were part of a community with white South Africans, even if they didn't recognize that at the time.
Well, yeah, I would love to get in. That takes us into the whole topic of racism and his work on human rights and how that's, I can see how that's been a legacy brought back down to you of working with injustice and all that. I'm curious what your view on racism, how you view it. Because I remember you speaking. I like your approach. It feels coming from a place of understanding and love of individuals. And like you said, you were where you were part of a community, even though the white community in South Africa didn't recognize you as part of the community. To come from that position is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that it was, partly it is a part of the legacy of African culture that we were raised in, as well as my father's perspective on Christianity and the Bible, and that, you know, that we, that this world, that we inhabit this world as part of a community that is the community of all human beings, of all living, that, you know, that when, that we, that there is a balance that we need to hold in this world, and that when we oppress, then we are putting the whole out of balance, including ourselves. So that there is a real loss for the oppressor as well as the oppressed, for the racist as well as the victim of racism, that there is a real loss in any system of oppression, that it is a system that impacts negatively both the oppressor and the oppressed. And whether and I have to say, you know, it's not something that came very easily to me, that perspective. Because looking at life under apartheid, it was very easy to see how Africans were oppressed, how people of color were oppressed. So to then, and it was easy to see how white South Africans were privileged. And so to come to this understanding that they might be materially privileged, they might be politically privileged, but fundamentally they are also out of balance, that they are also losing part of a gift of community. And that was, I think that is, again, probably one of the greatest gifts that my parents gave us, was that recognition that when you other someone, you are taking some opportunity away from yourself as well.
Yeah, that's true. It's just like that recognition that when I did that in a conversation with somebody, and it was a judgment, and I could have a difference of opinion, but I didn't have to project it onto her like, oh, well, what does she know, blah, blah, blah. And what I lose is that opportunity to learn from somebody what their life's been about.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and as I said, I think when at the conference, that it, we all do it, you know, we all do it. And I think that, for me, the importance is getting ourselves to the place where we recognize when we are doing it and are able to step back and recognize the humanity of the person that we have decided that we know, whose story we have decided that we know, who we have decided has nothing of value to give us, who we have decided is, you know, is something less than we are. That if we can at least get ourselves to the point where we recognize when we have taken that step and are able to step back, and open ourselves to the opportunity for community, for fellowship, for, as you say, for learning from that person who we know as other, because, you know, without fail for me, in those places where I have had an interaction with somebody and have caught myself at the time of othering them, when I have stepped back and allowed myself to listen to that person's particular story, I have gained amazingly in that exchange once I have allowed it to happen.
Yeah, and that's that place in us where we have to recognize, like you said, we have to recognize and be aware that we're doing it. And I'm wondering, it probably stems from something, you know, I don't know, in our upbringing or our perspective on things and, you know, taking a look at why we judge things. It's interesting. Sometimes you just have to laugh at what you judge. I found myself judging a particular type of driver.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of laugh like, why do I have that judgment? It doesn't make sense. Where did it come from? And, you know, when you start thinking that way, you kind of laugh at it and let it go. Well, we're talking to Naomi Tutu, and we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be right back and learn more from this amazing woman.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life, too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host@transformationtalkradio.com.
Ocean's Flavor natural sea salts are specialty products with less sodium, up to 68% than standard table salt, free of any chemicals or artificial flavors. Ocean's Flavor natural sea salts maintain 84 necessary minerals for a balanced diet and healthy body. All Ocean's Flavor natural sea salts may be purchased at oceansflavor.com. And now, Ocean's Flavor natural less sodium sea salts has introduced heart health healthy gourmet seasoning at 68% less sodium than table salt. Available in Mexican, Italian, garlic, seasoned, Asian, barbecue, Cajun, and Chipotle flavors. The sodium is the lowest of any seasonings on the market today. Purchase heart-healthy gourmet seasonings on the web at oceansflavor.com and in many national grocery chains. Oceansflavor.com, the only salt company that produces 100% natural, low-sodium sea salt.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller, 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
Women of wisdom, women of wisdom, women of wisdom, rise and shine, sister of kind, spirit of woman, rise and shine.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Woman. I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm talking to Noemi Tutu. That song you heard, Woman of Wisdom, is the Woman of Wisdom Conference theme song. It's written by Lorraine Bays, and she'll be singing it on our opening night, February 16th. And our opening night, we're going to have Jean Shinoda Bolin and Noemi Tutu. I think I gave the wrong date before. She's going to be there on opening night on February 16th. So that's going to be a great evening. So we've been talking about the other, and when we do that, to other people, and which we also do to ourselves, as we were talking about. I'm curious, because you grew up in South Africa and other places, and you live in the States and go back and forth. You're in South Africa a lot too. How do you see racism different in the U.S. compared to South Africa?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that in many ways it's very much the same. In many ways it's the same in that, it makes us lose our connections to one another. So it is similar. I think that the difference is probably the fact that in South Africa we are closer to coming out of a system where that racism was the legal form of government, where racism determined every aspect of your life. And in the law books, you know, that it was part of the laws that determined where you could be born, where you went to school, what kind of job you could hold. So in that way, it's a little bit different that we are still in that transitional phase in South Africa in trying to move from that all-encompassing racism that was a legal system. I think that what is striking for me is actually to see how much the impact of racism continues to be felt in this country where people tend to believe that we have, you know, there's been the talk about a post-racial society, etc., but that it still impacts people in access to education in this country. It still access people in access to opportunity. It still access impacts people in terms of who it is we are in community with. I mean, I am particularly struck in this country about how segregated we are in times of worship. That we have black churches and white churches in communities up and down this country who are professing the same faith and yet do not worship together and do not even work together around issues in most places around issues of concern to the community. I've been struck that in terms of the Truth and Reconciliation workshops that I have carried out in this country, how many of them are actually I'm approached by members of Christian churches, of a white church and a black church, who say that we need to heal our relationship in order for us to be a model for the rest of the community. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there is a tendency here to pat ourselves on the back about how far we have moved in terms of race and racism. And I have to tell you that as a black woman and a mother of children of color, that they continue to experience racism even in their relationships with peers in this day and age.
Can you give us an example of what your children are experiencing?
Well, I mean, the most recent was actually an experience my son had with a friend of his, somebody who he had been friends with since he was in second grade, and he is now in ninth grade. And just this past spring, they were talking about exchanging Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon cards, something, you know, those games that young men play that I don't understand and don't even pretend to understand what exchanging these cards, but he's trading these cards means. And that his friend said to him, you know, what about my cards that you stole? And, you know, my son said, well, I didn't steal any of your cards. Well, why would you even say that? And without missing a beat, his friend said to him, you're black. That's what black people do. And this is a child who I have known since he was very young, and whose parents I know, and who I know, you know, his parents, this is not something that his parents countenance in their own home. And so for me, the story is important in that it talks about how racism has permeates our society, that even a child raised in a home where, you know, his parents, when I spoke to his parents about them, about it, who I knew were going to be shocked, were shocked and stunned and didn't know where he could have got that from, that idea that black people are thieves. And clearly, if he's not getting it at home, he's getting it in the rest of society. And for me, that experience, which was one that was so hurtful to my son, that he, you know, it took him a couple of days to get over and be able to speak to his friend about what it felt like to have him, you know, that my race says to you that the characteristic I have is of a criminal, that those are the wounds that parents of color have to deal with over and over.
Yes, and shocking, I think, because like you said, he's been friends since second grade with him, so it's a long friendship, and versus somebody who he just casually knew, who, you know, would throw something out like that. I think even makes it harder for him. But yeah, I don't think, unless you are of a minority race in a country, we aren't aware. I think some of it's ignorance or, you know, lack of education of, you know, I think we need to put ourselves in other people's shoes more and you know, to really know what the effect of our words are, or even our actions. And I think, I'm wondering too, is it subtle? Is it more subtle? Because we went through all the racial, civil rights in the 50s and all that. And you, like you say, we've been on a healing path about it, but it's still here. You still see
it. And I do think that in many instances, it has the way that we see racism is different, that it is more subtle. It is, you know, it is, I talk to people about it, is about somebody like me walking into a store and right away having the store detective or, you know, following me.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that when they said to me they saw somebody who's likely to shoplift? why would that be their perception of me? And that we don't, and for me, you know, I normally will challenge them and say, you know, why is it that you think that I would be interested in stealing? And that they're shocked at being challenged, and very often their denial that, you know, well, I wasn't really following you, okay, if that's what you want to believe. I do think that partly it is that we have stopped talking about it, that we think that if we don't talk about it, that it'll go away. And the reality is that we know from our own personal experiences with family and friends that when there is something that is wrong in the relationship, if you don't talk about it, it gets worse. It does not heal through ignoring it. And so that lesson for me is a lesson that we should be transferring into issues of racism, of sexism, of homophobia, of, you know, all of the isms that limit our community.
Yeah, I read a quote of something you said that people we're afraid to have those conversations, and mm-hmm. and I understand that there is that, because we don't want to be labeled as racist, or there's just a fear around having those conversations, and how do you approach that?
Well, I mean, I think that the way that I do with my work is to let people, first of all, know that we all other. And race is one way that we other in this world. And it's been one of the really big ways, and that has had, a really lasting impact. But, you know, that we are raised in communities that teach us to other, that teach us in statements that, you know, we might not even be aware of initially of, you know, as you say, where did you get this sense about these other drivers? You probably heard when you were in the car with adults from your family comments about these types of drivers and not even being aware of hearing those. So that the messages of othering are messages that we take in very often without even being aware of it. And that to recognize that we all have ways in which we other. I think that the difference about racism has been that those who have othered based on race have tended to be those who are powerful and have been able to not just make their othering a personal pain, like my son's story, but a structural institutional pain, lack of access to education, to housing, to employment. And so that the historic results of that we continue to feel.
I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're going to have to take a break, and so we'll come back. So, I know it's an intense topic, and there's so much to say, but let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk to Naomi Tutu.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life, too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host@transformationtalkradio.com.
Have you ever wanted to join a yoga class, yet felt self-conscious or simply didn't have the time? Now you can bring live Kundalini yoga into your home with KRI-certified Dr. Ann Taylor. You will learn a scientific technology of movement, mantra, meditation, and breathing techniques designed to balance your mind, body, and spirit. Sign up today for our free newsletter and receive your first class free. Visit Ann with an E, Taylor.com.
Are you at a crossroads? Feeling stuck? I'm Karen Hager, the Fog City Psychic. My gift is helping people who are in transition receive spirit-led guidance about their next steps. I offer private sessions via phone or Skype, intuitive development classes, and much more. Please visit my website, fogcitypsychic.com, to find out how I can help you move out of the fog.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low-cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web, drdarvish.com.
Welcome back. This is Chris Stainis on Voices of Women, and I'm talking with Noemi Tutu. And we were having quite an interesting conversation on racism at the break. We were talking about how sometimes difficult it is to have these kind of conversations with people, and even on the other end, to be accused of being racist when you're trying your best not to be. And it's just, you know, there's not the intention. And I share with Noemi that sometimes it feels like we have to walk on eggshells, that we're not going to just, someone's going to not think that we're being racist and we're saying the wrong thing. And so, Noemi, let's talk about that. What do you do in working with people in that situation?
Well, you know, and I mean, the first thing is to admit that it is a difficult conversation to have. It is a conversation that is frightening for most people to start talking, because we do have in us, as I said, you know, we have prejudices, and to admit before we start the conversation that there are going to be times when we're going to say something that does not sit right with somebody else, that sounds racist, that sounds prejudiced, that sounds judgmental, but then the person who has heard it and the person who has said it have to be willing to sit in the space and hear what the other person heard. You know, what was it that I heard when you said that? And what was it that you thought you were saying when you said that? So what is it that I think you said, and what is it that you thought you said? And come to the recognition of that our experiences in the world do impact how we hear each other's stories. They do impact how we hear what we say to one another, but also to be very aware. I think that for white people especially, to be aware of the privilege that they have had institutionally and historically in this country and around the world, that their story is considered to be the norm, and that their perspective is considered to be the norm. I always tell people that for me I was almost rolling on the floor when we were going through the confirmation of Judge Sotomayor for the Supreme Court, and that there was all this conversation about, you know, what biases she was bringing as a Latina. And the statements themselves seem to imply that white men don't come with any biases. You know, that because her story was different from the story that has been accepted as the norm for what Supreme Court justices are, that then her story was the bias. And so, in my workshop, even as I make the space safe for us to have the conversations and to have the safe space for people to ask what it is that you heard that made you think that what I said was racist, but to also to be very clear to white people that you come into these conversations from a place of privilege. You might not recognize that, but the truth is, if you look at the stories that are told, they tend to be stories of your people and your history. And everybody else's story is kind of added in. And so that you come into this conversation bring from a place of privilege already.
Yeah, it's important to be aware of that. And your story of like walking into a store, I heard that too from a friend, a person of color who was on our conference committee several years ago. Mm-hmm. Talked about, because she came in, walked into our meeting place, and somebody was like that, you know, looking at her funny and following her as if, like, why are you walking into our church? And she came in just furious, and it made me really aware, because at that year we were having a speaker, an African-American woman, and I'm Iyanna Vanzant, who was like one of the spiritual leaders of black people. And I realized we were going to have a lot of people of color, and I just made it very clear, like, wow, it was an eye-opener. It's like, wow, we have to be welcoming to anyone who walks in our door. And I'm so glad that that happened, that we were able to be aware of it, because I think it's awareness that where we come to a healing place, because we consciously did that, and there was actually, I was told there was a woman who sat in the back and watched us and saw that we were welcoming. Because she came probably with the expectation that we, you know, that we might not be. And we were, because of what happened, it came to our awareness. And so I think, you know, that's the, just to bring things more aware to the forefront of how it is for people, for other people.
Exactly. And I mean, and as I say that, you know, to be aware of the privilege that you come with, even if you didn't ask for it, you know, if the reality is it's there. And at the same time that also to recognize that we each come with our own baggage, if you like, into these conversations. We each come with our own particular perspectives and biases. And that it is okay if you are willing to admit to it, that it is actually more than okay if you are willing to claim that reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the one reality is that we haven't experienced racism, because you say we're the norm. It's
exactly.
Norm. And when I was traveling, because my husband and I travel around the world, when we were in India, I had an uncomfortable feeling, and I could never explain what it was. But and it's a very interesting country to visit. I enter every country I go into with open eyes and wanting to learn about the country, and I just left feeling not so good, and I never could explain why. And it was an African-American woman here who told me, that's what I experience every day here in the States. That's racism. And I went, oh my God, I didn't have a name for it. I didn't know what I was feeling. And it really put me in that place of realizing what it is for her to live every day here. And what is the norm of white society. So that was another eye opener too. So it's been great talking to you today, and I look forward to seeing you in Seattle. I want everyone to know that there is a special for registering the conference. Everything is up on the website. You can register now, and we have some early bird specials, so you can attend Naomi's workshop and receive the evening for free. And also there's full weekend passes that there's a special discount. I mean, the special pass is discounted anyway, but there's a discount, early bird discount, if you register by November 30th. So go to our website, www.womenofwisdom.org, and read about all the events being offered and register. Some workshops could fill up sooner than others, and we want to see you in Seattle. So thank you so much for being with me today, Naomi.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm the founder of the Woman Wisdom Conference and the Woman Wisdom Organization, and also the author of the Amazon bestseller and award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women, which is a compilation of many of the stories and art and poetry and our speakers from our conferences over many years. And you can purchase that book at www.womenofwisdom.org. Next week, I'll be interviewing Dee Wallace. And if you'd like to contact me, you can email me at wow@womenofwisdom.org. So I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm glad to have shared this hour with you on Voices of Women. Have a great 11-11 day and weekend.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.